So we are learning Megillas Esther. We started talking, we started beginning the text a little bit last time. Just to review generally what we spoke, the theme was, is that my argument was, is at the beginning of the Megillas based on the Malbim, that it's really Ahasuerus asserting his authority, making it clear that he is in charge and that he is asserting his sovereignty over everybody. That's why he has the party. And that's why Vashti has the party also. Gam Vashti Hamalka, we pointed out, the Megillah says, Gam Vashti Hamalka, seemingly also, I read into that, for similar reasons, she has a party because she is the daughter of Belshazzar, the last of the Babylonian kings before the Persians took over, and she is not happy with Ahasuerus trying to assert his authority and sovereignty over everybody. Look how wonderful my authority is, and it says specifically in the Pesukim, you see it here, why does Ahasuerus make the party? He's doing it to show how lavish and wonderful his empire is to all of this middle management of the 127 counties, countries, states, whatever you want to call them, medinos, in his empire, to bring them closer, provinces, in his empire, right? And so Vashti is, I argue, is doing a similar thing. She is making her own party. I also then does Ahasuerus think to invite her. Only after does she do her own party does he think to invite her. And the argument I gave was, and you see hints of this in the Mefarshim, that, and again, the different opinions, the Gemara has like six opinions. Like there are multiple opinions. I'm going to adopt one approach. I'm not trying to be comprehensive. One approach is that he needs to put her in her place. Now, the last thing we were saying was that, well, he needed to put in her place, like, hey, you can't have your own political party going, meaning she is trying to rally the Babylonian base. The Babylonians still exist. The people are still there. Yes, the Persians conquered them, but the people still exist, and they're presumably loyal to Babel, to their previous, Babel doesn't exist, but they're loyal to their own grouping, and they're not so happy with the Persians who took over, and so she's rallying that base. So Ahasuerus needs to, first of all, put that down in a way that doesn't make it clear that he's nervous. Again, he can't say that I'm nervous about your building political power because that's already admitting you're building political power. I'm deliberately staying out of American politics, although you can see all of that today. Lots going on, a lot of parallels. And that's part of why he invites her. Now, she refuses. Now, understandably so, why she refuses. It's not just she's taking a feminist stance. You're not going to parade me about to show my beauty. There's something, I'm not saying that that's not right. I presumably think that's wrong also, and I think from a Sneas perspective we would condemn such a behavior. But it's unlikely that she is evoking such an idea. But rather, she's taking a stance. No, I'm the queen. I'm the daughter of the Babylonian king, and you married me because of who I am. You're nothing. And so I have people, I have support, and I'm not going to be paraded. Now, Ahasuerus is clear. Why is he parading her? Because she's so beautiful. And I was reading into it, only so beautiful. The only reason she's here is because of her beauty. That sort of puts her down. You're not here for any political role. You have no power. You're nobody. I know that you're married. You were the daughter of Belshazzar, and that's why we got married. But in front of the ministers, I'm going to show that I'm in charge. And she refuses. And I think we are up to the part where now Ahasuerus has to respond. But Ahasuerus is in a pickle. He can't. What's he going to do? He needs to be angry with her, and he is angry with her, and he needs to show that, but in the way that doesn't boost her political position. Meaning, again, if he says, I can't believe you did that, and he's so angry at the political side, again, he can't admit that it's about politics. And I'm going to argue that you see that in the Pesukim. Because again, now, he now, in Pesuk Yud Gimel, before he makes decisions, he consults with these people. Now, we know throughout the Megillah he doesn't do that. We don't see him consulting with people throughout the Megillah. When he wants to, and Haman asks to destroy the Jewish people, it's all fine. When Mordechai and Esther eventually ask to write letters back, it's all fine. When Esther asks him after the war, during the war, to give another day for the Jews in Shushan to fight, there's no consulting with anybody. Here he consults. That's the way you do it. Sounds like, well, he's not sure what to do. He needs some help here. And so, who are these? These are the cabinet. Meaning, he needs to, what's the big deal? You want to get upset at your wife? This is not about, clearly this is more than just about his relationship to his wife. This is something that you need to get the cabinet involved in. He presumably could punish her just fine if he wanted to, but that's not going to work. He needs to still send a message. She didn't come, so he needs to still get the point across. So Memuchan. Now the Gemara says Memuchan is Haman. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but leave him as Memuchan right now. Livnei Melech Vasarim. And then when you read, so we know what he's going to say. Part of the challenge in the Megillah is we know the story. Memuchan says, "What? You can't do this." You read what's so strange. Lo Melech Livato Avtavasti Amalka. She didn't just offend you. In Ivut, Uvat Lo Yochal Likon. I don't know what the English here says. Right? She wronged. Okay. Right? Ki al kol hasarim v'al kol ha'amim asher v'chol mignos ha'melech Ahasuerus. She wronged and offended everybody in the empire. Sounds interesting. How in the world did she do that? She may have personally offended Ahasuerus, and she may be standing up for the Babylonian cause, but we're not going to say that. But how is she offended everybody? So he says, Ki etzeidver ha'malka lo kol ha'nashim la'havzot ba'alehen be'inehen. If this word of this gets out, all the women, Kol Hanashim are going to now be mevasa their husbands, denigrate their husbands. Because Vashti was asked to come and she didn't come. It's a little bit, really? That's what's going to happen? A little bit over the top. All the women, Kol Hanashim. Because Vashti, the queen, refused to come when the king said so, so now every woman is not going to listen to her husband. Everyone knows she's the daughter of Belshazzar. Like, I'm not the queen, and he's not the king, and every woman... Really? But he doesn't stop. V'ayom hazeh, tomar nasaroz parasim adai, asher shemud var amalka l'chosar amelach, uchdai bizayon v'kosef. Everybody's going to hear about it, and it's going to be a disaster. It's going to get people angry, and you're going to destroy Shalom Bayis across the empire. It sounds a little bit over the top, no? Like, it's just... He's playing it up so much. And he continues. This could have all been accomplished in like half a pasuk. This is bad. You need to teach her a lesson. Get rid of her. He spends... Everybody's going to hear about it. He gets on. Write it and make sure it gets recorded as a law. Asher lo tavo vashtilik v'amelech ha'shvirosh. U'malchusay tein ha'melech liruta tova mimena. What do you write down as the law? This is a little bit of a machlokas. If you read the psukim, in kindergarten I was taught he killed Vashti. So what does this pasuk mean? Now it's in the English, it's right here. Right? It says, it should be written as the law. Asher lo tavo Vashti, lifnei ha-melech Ahasuerus, u'malchusayten ha-melech lirotah tova mimena. The end of the pasuk I know. Her kingship give to somebody else better than her. That part I understood. What happens to her? What's asher lo tavo? Asher lo tavo. I would have said, write down, she didn't come. I was always taught this, right? Write the mezalot, she didn't come. She got punished. Replace her. But if that was true, it would have said, asher lo ba'a vashti. Meaning, if you're writing the law, you're writing what happened in the past. You're writing, asher lo ba'a, or asher hi mi'anala va'a. I write something. But it happened. That Asher lo tavo, she will not come. She will not come. Asher lo tavo, in the future. And then you replace her. So then point out, yeah, there's the Gemara that says she was killed. But the Megillah doesn't say that. She's banished. Asher lo tavo, she will no longer come in the palace. Asher lo tavo et ne'melech. Not that she didn't. The first time I read it, she didn't come, so then she gets killed. Doesn't say that, actually. It says, Asher lo tavo, she will never come back. Fine. Now, again, V'nishma pitgam ha-melech asher ha b'chol mochudo ki rabahi, v'chol ha-nashim itnu yekar l'va'alehen. And what will this accomplish? All the women will respect their husbands. Limi gadol v'ad katan. And it will be from all the women will now have tremendous respect for their husbands. Really? V'itavad ha-rabin ha-melech v'ha-starim. Everyone likes this plan. V'yat ha-melech idvar memuchan. And everyone, this works out. And he does what he says. Make sure this is spread out. Everyone gets their own language. No one, I didn't understand it. I didn't read the Hebrew. Everyone in their own language. Every man will rule over his house and speak his own language. It just seems to me a little bit over the top. Really? You want to get rid of her because she didn't listen? Fine. I'm not saying right or wrong, but I can understand that. Memuchan is playing this up a lot. He's saying, and maybe this is one of the reasons that Chazal compare him to Haman, we'll see when we get to Haman, this isn't just about you. This is about the whole empire and all the women, and it's going to be terrible. It's not believable. Really? I don't buy it. Why is he saying it? Why is he playing this up? And the Megillah is dedicating, I don't know, like 5-6 psukim to the description of how terrible it's going to be. The women aren't going to listen to the husbands, and it's going to be a disaster. I think that if we accept what's going on before, if you accept the argument, that it's really about putting her in her place, so look, you can't punish her. What are you going to do? If you punish her, you're going to rally her base, right? I mean, again, I'm not going to make the parallels to modern politics, but when you try to punish someone, you rally their base, they become a martyr. That's what would happen. She'd become a martyr. And you become a martyr, you rally your base. He doesn't want to rally the base. The whole point was to put it down. So you can't say I'm punishing her. You need to give a reason. It almost sounds like it's so over the top that this is your cover. This is your cover. Your cover isn't about politics, and it's not about the Bavlim, it's not about the... It's about Shalom Bayis. Who doesn't like Shalom Bayis? We got to get rid of her because look what will happen to Shalom Bayis. We all love Shalom Bayis. We got to, you can't have Shalom, you can't have that, this will be a decision. Now, the women, that seems to be a given, that the women have to listen to the husbands. That's Shalom Bayis in the Persian community back in the day. Let's just accept that as a given, and which is not so far-fetched. And it's about Shalom Bayis. It's almost cover. Like, this is what we're going to say. And he says, this is why we're doing it. And he says, and write that this is what we're doing. And explain why. It's all there. It almost seems to me that it's providing cover. It's clearly, really, you're really worried about every woman and they're now not going to listen to her husband because Vashti refused. He told her to come. She didn't want to come. He killed her. So what? Well, only so what if what happens next? So it's providing almost cover for what's happening. It's providing cover for how this is going to play out, and therefore now he can manage to, and if you realize it doesn't say to kill her, because if he killed her, I would argue it makes her more of a martyr. He killed her, he couldn't deal with her. Meaning, killing her would, I'm conflicted a little bit about this point actually. If he killed her, it shows his power. I can do whatever I want, you think you're the daughter of Belshazzar, you are, but you're nothing, I'll kill you. But it also turns her more into a martyr. Meaning, you see, he couldn't deal with her. He couldn't deal with a powerful person, in, particularly a woman, in the palace. He can't deal with the Babylonians. He had the only way to deal with it is to kill her. It's also a sign of weakness a little bit. It, ironically, maybe, it could be both a sign of strength and a sign of weakness. So you can read it both ways. And maybe that's why the Pasuk says he banished her. If you banish her, it's a punishment, but I can deal with things. Killing her, I think, would just be more extreme. That would be more of a sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. Banishing her means I'm in charge. I decide who comes in and out. She's still there, but she's nothing. Meaning, she can go back, but she's less of a martyr, still have less of the ability to rally her base. And I think this is providing some of the cover for that. And you see right after that, so, Achar Hadvarim Ha'ile, Kishoch Hamad HaMelech HaSveiros, he is no longer angry, because he was, Zacharet Vashti Vet Asher Asata Vet Asher Nigzar Aleha. He remembers Vashti, what she did, Eish Asher Nigzar Aleha, and what happened, and the consequence. And then the next pasuk is find another woman, find another wife. Now, while the Torah, the Tanakh, doesn't always, we presume that people, humans have emotions throughout history, that's a normal thing. In the Megillah Esther, you hear about people's emotions a lot. He gets very angry very quickly. It doesn't say he's sad. It says he's no longer angry, and so we're moving on. It doesn't say he's sad about Vashti. Like I always thought, he needs a wife, Nebuch, now he's by himself. That's not what it says. It says he remembers Vashti, what she did and what happened, and they say, let's replace her. Yeah. It almost sounds like, again, if you're buying into this whole thing, it's a political calculation. And who does it replace her with? So he doesn't care, almost. Where are we going to look? If you just read, where are you replacing her with? Good-looking girls, okay. That makes sense. What are we going to do? We're going to go throughout the empire and find the most beautiful girls. And it's not just we're going to go, Ve'afked ha'melech pekidim, you'll assign people, you'll assign official people in each province to send them. If you're following the whole thing, if you buy it, yeah?
No, I'm just saying, the book of report, it doesn't take any responsibility, because the A-Sons, the Nick's
Avalanche, it just happened.
It's not like, I didn't do anything.
Yeah, but I'm going to argue that, yeah, so I'm going to argue also, that's the contest. And why we were married to begin with. He was married to Vashti, I'm arguing, Melvin says, the daughter of Belshazzar, to try to get the empire together. So after now, he needs something else. Meaning, 127 provinces in the Middle East, not so simple. Even one country in the Middle East is not so simple to run. I can't imagine having a lot of different populations, not so simple. So he's trying to do something else. It's exact when he remembers what Vashti was for him, now they need to say, okay, let's find somebody else. And we're going to find somebody else. Well, let's send people out everywhere. Not because he wants to find the most beautiful people. It's politics. It makes everyone feel involved. Everyone now has a chance. Every province is going to send their girl. Everyone now has a chance. It's a beautiful idea. It's conniving and clever. Beautiful, probably not. But it's conniving and clever and manipulative. But it's more than just a beauty pageant. It's let's make sure everybody feels involved. It's a great thing. Let's make sure everybody feels involved. Every province feels involved. And he gets everybody involved, and they all come. And then they all stay also. There's this whole rule, right? Once they try out, they have to stay in Shushan, which seems like it's a harem, fine. But it also means that every province has people in Shushan, right? If you're from wherever it is, you can come visit your contestant, you can see this on a TV show. They're coming and cheering on for your person who's still there. She's still in the king. Even though she wasn't chosen, she's not nobody. She now is one of the pilugshim. She's not one of the women, not one of the wives. She has a lesser status, but she's not sent home. She's now by Shash God, Spitz HaMelech, Shomer HaPilugshim. She has a quasi-status. Why? I don't know. Maybe this, it's worth the king. You can't be with other people. I get it. At the moment, you're so fine. But it also accomplishes the goal of now everyone feels like they have representation. You have buy-in from the whole empire. Right, it's a way of creating alliances by marrying and being. I'm arguing that that's part of the point. There's one last point before I see the next thing, and you see after based on this why it's not surprising that there's an assassination plot against Ahasuerus later. There's an assassination plot against Ahasuerus, but not everybody's happy with him. Not everybody's happy with him. So it makes sense in the context of the Megillah why there's an assassination attempt on him and that it has to be stopped. It's interesting who stops it and why. But it makes sense in the context of his political upheaval, then the whole story makes some sense. Now, I've been arguing it's all about... before we get to that point. There's an extra Nekuda. There's a beautiful Yaros Devas from Yonasan Leibschitz. In the context of something completely off, he says he's trying to make a different point. But I'm going to use him to make a different point. So he's talking about Mazel, and he's talking about how things worked out calendarically. And he says, you know, when was his party? When did he invite Vashti? I don't know. Doesn't say. He says, do the math. So he does. So if you look on the page here, Uvazet havin ma'asharu chachamim zechonam v'bracha b'vashti, v'yomel chachamim yodei ha'itim. I'm on the next page. Oh, I'm sorry. Yours is double-sided. The Yaros Vash on the column on the left. So it's the Chelek Aleph, which you're dying towards the beginning of it. So just the context again. If you look in the Pesukim, when he said, when Ahasuerus goes to look for guidance as what to do with Vashti, right? If you look carefully, it says, Vayomer HaMelech LaChachamim Yod'ei HaItim. What Yod'ei HaItim? Chachamim. Yod'ei HaItim, they're the knowers of the times. So Chazal said they knew calendaric math. Right? Ibur Shana. Why do I have to know Ibur Shana? Like, why do I have to know about how to chesbin out the calendar and the math and the moon and the sun? So he says, why? So he says, Shiyudim la ber shanim v'kvach chodashim. Kedas mal asos b'mal gavashti. He wanted them to help you figure out what to do with Vashti. Why? V'adav ratabo v'asmuto. Ma'inyan chos v'kviyat yirachim. Adas bar chok u'mishpat ha'isham sarep l'kem tibay melech. Why do you need the calendaric people to tell you what to do about this woman? V'chizem meitav limudam v'chachmatam v'atam their expertise. Ukvar darasi v'zakol v'ako. I gave some answers. Aval keid yuvan adavar hazekach. He gives you the math. He gives you the math. And if you figure out, not so much time, right? If you look, at the beginning of his third year, he makes a feast. Fine. So the beginning means when? What's the beginning of his third year? Right? There's a machlokas in the Gemara. The Gemara explains that Malchei Umos Ta'olam counts from Tishrei. Okay, that's the beginning. Okay. Vim came echela mishtebet Tishrei. Uvimonos alev shechir Roshoma Alkabetz. Roshoma Alkabetz, we'll quote him a lot. He's famous for writing Lechadodi and the Paris Manos Halevi on Megillat Esther. I'm sure he did other things, but that's what he's most famous for. The Manos Halevi is a fascinating book. I came across it. It's amazing. When I started to write about Megillah, so then I started reading. It's an amazing sefer. He brings tons and tons and tons of different opinions of like early Achronim that I've never heard of. It's just like they wrote about it at the time, and he like wants to mefalpel with them. He says, fine. Hevi Midrash Yamim Rabim Yamim Shnayim Rabim Shlosha. It says Yamim Rabim. So the Suda was 180 days, and he says it was pushed off by 5 days from the beginning. So Vim Kemitchila Tishrei, he says the Suda started based on Tsukim 5 days after the year, because it's Yamim Rabim, which means five. So 180 days later, right? So what does that come out to? Veshisha Chodashim Gimel Mleim Begimel Chaserim Kederech HaKviyos. So what does that come out to? So they have 6 months, right? Half are 30 days, half are 29 days. Good. Nisan ulepiza akupehem in beches nisan. Ches nisan. V'achar kachas asudah shivat yamim. La'am nimsim b'shushan. So then he's arguing as la'am in Shushan, he does 7 days, right? 7 days for the people in Shushan. And then he invites Vashti. So we're now talking about the 15th of Nisan. Imken yomashviya yatesva v'nisan. Shomer lavaz la'avi et Vashti l'fanam m'kushet v'keder malchus v'arum al-lahar es yofya. No, we do that for the next, we do that because of what Esther did later. But it works out. We eat rice. We're supposed to eat rice. We're supposed to eat rice on the second day Pesach, because that's when Esther, or Daniel, that's when Esther did the Mishnah. Okay, fine. So, okay, so, Tetzvav Nisan, which is Pesach. Okay. So it's nice that the story happened, he invites Vashti on Pesach, who cares? He's not Jewish, she's not Jewish. Yeah. V'hine yadua devashti bas Belshazzar haita. She's the daughter of Belshazzar. Vunerag v'tesvav v'nisan kanoda v'piyut lel Pesach. There's a piyut that Ashkenazim have in the end of the Haggadah on lel Pesach, v'yibach ha'tzialayla, I think. And it says there, we have a medrash, that Belshazzar died on tesvav nisan. He said it was davka Belshazzar's yurtzeit. So he says, he wants to know, is that why she didn't come? She holds the minig. That there's an Ashkenazi minig that on the yahrzeit you don't go to a wedding, so maybe that's the chesbon. Im kein ein asma v'shag gadol v'ati sfeirah, she didn't want to come that day. Ki yomahu la avelus gadol amisa savi amel hagadol. It's like she's not avelus on the yahrzeit. She didn't want to come that day. Tomorrow I'll come, not today. V'animusam at least abul hakrev korban lavo deska akum. Fine, okay, I'm making it more Jewish, but they want to bring korban and stuff. They have a zara. It's the yahrzeit. She didn't want to come, right? Omnam zeu im loyta asanam uberes. Okay, but that only works if there was one Adar, right? Because we said 180 days is 6 months. Right. But if there were two Adars, so then it's not. Then the yahrzeit would be a month later. Then we're talking about Tesvav Adar, not Tesvav Nisan. So he wanted to know. That's why he had to go to the Chachamim, Yodei Ha'itim, to ask them, maybe this year with the son of Uberes. Okay. Rav Yonasan Eibshitz. Fascinating. Clever. Wonderful. Leave that aside for a moment. If you though assume though it was Belshazzar's yahrzeit, what better day to put Vashti in her place than on Belshazzar's yahrzeit? Right? Belshazzar, everyone knew Belshazzar died. And he died and the Persians took over. And now Vashti is seemingly boosting up Belshazzar's career again, his base, his people. What better day to put her in her place than on the very day that commemorates the defeat of her empire and her people? So, yes, although he's using it for something else, but the math works. Whether or not you like the reasoning, he says, the math works. The math works. It was Tetzvav Nisan, according to the Roshoma Alkabetz. If it was Tetzvav Nisan, and that indeed is Belshazzar's yahrzeit, it makes even more sense that it should be on that day. Now, we only have a few minutes, so I'll just introduce this topic. But I've been trying to argue there's this whole political thing going on. And that, again, this Megillah is written by Ruach HaKodesh, but it's written by people, by Ruach HaKodesh. And while all Sfarim, I'm assuming the people who are described in all of Tanakh, had emotions and all sorts of things, I'm much more comfortable discussing them in the context of the Megillah because it was written by Mordechai and Esther, albeit with Ruach HaKodesh, but by people. And so I've been arguing that there's this whole political drama going on. Who cares? So what? So what? So Achashverosh and the politics, why is that the way? I'm a Frumid, why do I care that Achashverosh is trying to, who cares? I'm going to make an argument, not today, but the whole point of the Megillah is twofold. The whole point is twofold, so that doesn't make sense, but that's not good grammar. But the whole point of the Megillah is to see the Yad Hashem in the world. You're supposed to see that God runs history. That's clear. God runs history, but more than that. That's what we're supposed to learn from reading the Megillah. But it's more than that. It's not just that God runs history. It's that the characters, the players in the Megillah themselves realize that and react accordingly. I'm arguing that Mordechai and Esther, during the course of the story, recognize the fact that God is running history, and therefore they change what they do. They react appropriately, and it explains why different parts of the Megillah exist. Why the Megillah includes... I'm assuming a lot of things happened. A lot of details happened that are not recorded. Why are these recorded specifically? Because it shows how it happens. And the secret of the Megillah is that we may have mentioned, I think we did, Hashem's name isn't mentioned. Hashem's name isn't mentioned. We'll make more of it next time. It's not there. Not because he's not there, but because he's working through natural means. Ahasuerus is a self-interested king worried about his own chesbonos with the bavlim and the this and the that. And Vashti, everyone's worried about their own thing. He could care less, seemingly, I'm not arguing, about God, about the Jews, about anything having to do with anything, according to this understanding. It's about politics. It's about him, self-interest, exerting sovereignty over the 127 provinces. Yes. And it's specifically through that you see the Yad Hashem. Because the Yad Hashem doesn't always work in Kriyat Yamsuf. That's also Yad Hashem, clearly. But it's working through even Ahasuerus, who's self-interested, who's doing it, can care less. You could see God's hand in the whole thing because it sets it up perfectly. Because if this wouldn't have happened, and Vashti wouldn't have gotten rid of, then he would never have gotten Esther. Remember, pause. But he selects Esther, who he doesn't even know where she's from. He doesn't know that she's Jewish. So where does he think she's from? Why does he care? She's representing the grow. It's all good. It doesn't matter. It's set up perfectly for this story to work out. Because the Yad Hashem is particularly found not in the open, explicit miracles, but it's found in the everyday. That's why the story opens up with the Ahasuerus and ends with the Ahasuerus. The very end, the Ahasuerus makes taxes. Who cares? Because it's a story about regular, everyday events. Ahasuerus being the king. And so he rules, he makes parties, he makes taxes, that's what he does. And through that you see the Yad Hashem. Through all these self-interested acts, through all of these ridiculous things. They're just personal politics. But you see the richness of the politics. But even in that, it's always Yad Hashem running it. That's what we'll start to see part of that next week. And so I'll reuse part of this packet for that. Okay.